Hello, my friends. Today in Brand Your Dream Show, we have a very interesting guest. We're talking about cybersecurity and how much is too much when you talk about your brand, when you share information about yourself online, and when you quite probably can get in danger with too much of authenticity or reality of your message. So I'm introducing you to Lance Fontenor, amazing expert in cybersecurity. And please tell us more about who you are, what you do, and how you can help our audience.
Well, thank you very much for having me on your show. And my name is Lance Fontenor, and not many people get my surname right. You've done a very good job of that. And I work in cybersecurity. I've got a very long background working in IT, and over the last number of years, I've moved into cybersecurity and recently got involved in and interested in psychology and how psychology is used within cybersecurity. So my podcast topics that I go in is figuring out how people think, and then also trying to use those lessons when doing cybersecurity investigations to understand attackers, how they think, how they act, how they behave, what is their methods that they function, and their techniques and their processes that they follow. Because these all gives you clues on how people are targeted, but they also give you an idea of how you can protect yourself. So short and sweet, I try and figure out how people think to protect themselves.
So it's all sound absolutely fantastic. And I love your content a lot. And by the way, I recommend to everybody to read Lance's blog and whatever he writes on LinkedIn. So you were writing about digital identity. And as a marketer and all the brand experts, marketing experts, we always say that you have to be visible to build your personal brand. You need to show up as much as it possible. But in your case, I want to ask how much is too much? So maybe we probably will show too much for other people who don't have that good intention towards us. What is digital identity and how visibility can potentially affect it, and how we can protect our digital identity in a correct way?
Digital identity is made up of a number of things. It's made up of your social media profiles, of your online profiles. And it's also made up of about all of your kind of footprints that make up your identity. So when I'm talking about digital identity, invariably I'm referring to a telephone number, I'm referring to an email address, and social media accounts. Now, the other aspects that make up your digital identity, when you go into the deeper, you start talking about some of the more physical aspects like your home address, work address, maybe business association or family members and that kind of thing. So you're talking about a network that builds up, and that constitutes your digital identity. Now, with a digital identity to use in every interaction that you have online, whether it's interacting as a business person or when you're interacting as a personal person. So when you log into a website, you're invariably using an email address and a password, or using a telephone number when you're talking about some of the social media accounts, and then again, a password. Any transactions that are required out of that will need a bank account, and a bank account is attached to a home address, or in certain cases, a business address. So that makes up your digital identity, whether you're talking about a personal one or a business one. Where it becomes problematic is that if that information is collated, and that intelligence is then put together, and then it's actually used in things like identity theft or when somebody impersonates a business, which happens quite often. So the key thing is making sure that you separate your brand and your marketing from the more personal identity aspects of your digital identity. So branding is slightly different to your digital identity. Digital identity tends to be very personal. It's what identifies you and how you interact online, but also how you interact on a daily basis. Branding is how you represent yourself and how you represent your company. Now, the key thing with branding is obviously representing the ethos of the business, the ethos of your own way of working, your own characteristics, your work ethos, your business ethos, the values of the company, your own personal values, that comes out in your branding. And that also comes out in your relationships and your work that you do. So it's making sure that when you're doing your branding, you understand that there's a bit of a separation of the between the two, and that you're presenting the information within your branding in a way that gives you a certain amount of separation. The challenge is that when you want to be authentic, you need to make sure that it's contextual and it's related to the brand that you're dealing with. If you start becoming too authentic and you bleed out a significant amount of personal information, that becomes a really rich source of reference and contextual information that can be used to then build up a person's profile. The interesting thing is that there are many, you could say, scraping services or business collation service, where they collect and put all of this, the social business profile information together, and they resell that as a marketing service. And you can buy marketing information like that, where you can collate the information based on people's positions, people's salaries, or potential their historical work that they've done. And that can be used as a way of business marketing. That's also very important, because that can also be used to establish your digital identity and actually create a profile of a person. So there's two ways of looking at branding and digital identity, but making sure that you've got a slight separation between the two and you have a bit more privacy when it comes to the actual core components of your digital identity, and making sure that you manage that very, very carefully, and that you know that it can be, there is quite a lot of information available out there, and that it can be collated very, very easily. Unfortunately, when you have anything like a data breach, where companies or databases get leaked online, this information gets public, becomes public. And that again is scooped up. And there's two ways that it's getting done. There's a lot of services that are using it as a reference point to make you aware that this has happened, so you can actually then take steps to protect your identity. There's also a section of the society that uses that information as a form of targeting, because they build up a profile out of that, especially when it comes to some of the websites that have been leaked, because there's been some very sensitive information that's been leaked over a number of years. And some very notable ones are Equifax and some of the bigger ones, where these huge, very, very in-depth digital identities have been leaked when it comes to email address, social security numbers, especially for United States people, passport numbers, bank accounts, passwords. There was a significant amount of very, very digital information.
I have a question to you. So yes. I want to do it a little bit more practical, because, you know, I remember when I started my Facebook in 2009 or something, yeah. I put a photo which I had on my computer, which is obviously was almost my passport photo. Mm-hmm. It's not necessarily was on my passport photo, but I mean, it was on some documents, because it was handy. It was just nearby. And I saw that many people use the passport or document photo on their social media profiles, especially when we talk about LinkedIn, right? So we're supposed to have professional photo. How dangerous it is?
Passport photos and identity photos are very, I would classify very sensitive. It's not something that you would want to do, because you can very easily edit that kind of picture if it's a digital photo. And once that's edited, you can potentially print it out, and you've now got that person's identity. I've seen there's a Twitter stream where you can actually look for people who've posted pictures of their credit cards or their badges. They've started a new job and said, oh, look at my badge, or I've got a new credit card, or I've got a new debit card, and they put pictures online. And yeah, and people have literally taken those and they've used them fraudulently.
So like, it's rely on the identity. We will use your bank account. Yeah, thank you.
Literally. And so you need to have a certain amount of awareness. People tend to forget that when they're online, they think they're in a walled garden and they're safe because it's either within Facebook or within a website.
One more question.
Yeah.
So, interesting thing, which I was just thinking while you were talking about this identity situation. For example, sites like Google Business, they ask us to share certain information, which I didn't want to share this information because for that I need to share my address and I run my business from home, for example, and I had to mention this address because my business is also registered on that specific address and they request for that address. Now, in my country as well, when I share the specific information with the government, it's also, as you said, it's available publicly for the business registered. So anyone pretty much can combine this tool and figure out my name, my address, my phone, that's all public information.
Yeah.
I mean, I do use several different telephones and stuff like this. So not to share on here that everything is available online. I'm careful about that. And I use different emails and things like that. Obviously different from the public information, just like you recommended. But how we can avoid this overlap? Because obviously it's a public information and for businesses, especially, you know, they just don't have other options like to share it with government and government. Voila, this is information. Awesome. And Google is here as well.
Yeah, that is a bit of a challenge. There's a bit of a dichotomy between transparency and also privacy. Once the information's out there, it's out there. There's no way of getting it back. So the key thing you have to take or be aware of is if you've provided that information and it has become public at some point in time, you'll be able to find it online. You can Google searches will bring up that information very, very quickly. It doesn't take long to pivot or do different searches to get the information. And you don't have to be super smart to do it. You can do some basic searches and get all that information out. So getting back to your question, how do you protect yourself? The key thing is looking at it slightly differently. Instead of looking at protecting yourself because the information is already public, be very aware of the information that's already out there and that it can potentially be used. And that's sometimes where you have to take a bit more preventative measures. Maybe if you are concerned about things like your bank account, your business account, put alerts on them. You know, make sure that you've got alerts specifically to your bank account, personal accounts, or anything of that nature, so you're actually monitoring what's actually happening. Because those alerts will give you an indication. A simple alert mechanism that I use is I have a password manager. So if a website becomes compromised, they monitor the websites or they monitor the feeds that provide that information. And that'll alert me if the website has been had an issue that forces me to then change a password and make it more secure. So that's a simple way that you can use a password manager to help manage your identity online. The other thing that I wanted to just introduce is your digital footprint. So your digital footprint is how wide and how many different places your identity has been registered on the internet. Now, unfortunately, that can be quite extensive, especially if you've been online for an extended period of time, because each company that you interact with will require at least two things, an email address and a telephone number, or an email address, a telephone number, and a password. And then once you log in, they say set up your profile, which basically means all of your personal information, like your name, your telephone number, your address, and an email address, and obviously the password. So what happens is now that your digital identity has been registered with that site and you registered with a second site, and then some of the bigger marketplaces, now what you've got is your footprint starts increasing. Now it's spreading. And the key thing is actually being aware that the information is out there. All it takes is for one of those sites to lose that information for that to become public. And that's why I talk about a digital footprint and having that awareness. So if you're aware that the information is out there, then you can deal with it in a better way, because then at least you have that thought in the back of your mind that the information is already out there. And if somebody starts using it, you're forewarned, which means you can then deal with it. And that's on my own personal life. I've got alerts set up on my bank accounts, and I use a password manager because it makes managing those identity issues a lot easier. And those are simple steps that you can take. If you don't have a password manager, an easy thing to do is just take a spreadsheet and list all the websites that you think you've registered on and the amount of information that you've put on. And that will give you an idea of how much information have you shared.
I can't imagine to list all the sites where I registered.
Take 10 of the most, 10 of the most common sites that you use. So let's say, for instance, your shopping site, your banking site, social media sites, and let's say work and a couple of other places.
Is it different, by the way, between apps and sites? Or they share the same database?
No, it's the same data. If you've got an app, it's normally connected to a business or a website in the back end. So normally those two are synced. But the other important thing is, which we've not spoken about, is that your phone is your digital identity. And it's very much integrated in people's lives in every aspect. And this has probably got more data on it than what you've got in a filing cabinet, just because of the amount of capacity that it has. Because it's got all of your personal information on there. It's got all of your potential finance information on there. It's got your email account on there. And if you've got a lot of personal notes and anything else you've got in there, your photos, it's, in many cases, this is somebody's life. It's a catalog of their life. And if this gets lost, it can be quite serious. So making sure that you're using as many features as you can to protect your phone, and you're keeping that safe, because that is the biggest trove of information that you can get for any person.
You know, it's very interesting, because I think for some reasons, I mean, maybe correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like many people do not protect their phones in terms of antivirus and all the things while they're doing that for computers. Mm-hmm. And it's obviously some kind of programs are like advertised to you with like, okay, put some antivirus protection on your computer and blah, blah, blah. But it's much lesser on phone, and we truly believe that nothing can happen to the phone. I mean, at least it's my feeling. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's different. Let me know.
I think the reason why people think phones are safer is, one, because they're always with them. People always think they've got with them, and which means it's always safe. At the end of the day, a phone is literally a computer. There's nothing else that it is. It's a computer in a small package. And a lot of the newer phones have got significant more computing power than what people had many years ago when they had their own computers. Yeah. The other thing is that when it comes to phones, people are quite reckless when it comes to some of the applications that they install, which is where a lot of the problems have crept in. It's because people see something, oh, it's an app, I'll just download it. It's just for a bit of fun. It's a game. It's a free game or something else. And they play the game and they don't touch it for a while. But each time you install an app, which is a game or a play or something else, you're leaking more and more data. And a lot of the applications that are available are not as well vetted as what they could be. And people don't think of those apps as a potential point where their data can be harvested. Androids are a lot worse, because you can actually install apps from third-party markets. So instead of going to Google Play, you can go to a third-party store and you download them. Many of those are compromised. And that's where a lot of people are having problems with that. And that's where a lot of data losses are happening. It's where a lot of malware and a lot of things get introduced, and where they introduce all kinds of things like phone scams and stealing bank account information and many things like that. So phones are very serious. I will ask
you a potentially terrible question, but yeah, just answer this in one sentence. Android or Apple?
Apple.
Okay. So my next question will be about authenticity and what we sometimes share online too much, and touch a very important point, which is bank secret questions. So when we talk about our teacher's name, the name of our first pet, when we share photos of our kids, of our family, of our house, things are really private. At the same time, obviously, if I will walk with my dog or something like that, why not to share the name of the dog, right? So what is dangerous and what is not dangerous in this case, and how people, these bad people, can get their eyes for this kind of data and use it against us?
Touching on authenticity, the first thing I think when it comes to authenticity is the intent of your authenticity. What is the purpose of the authentic message? And what is it, the message that you're trying to get across? Very much agree, authenticity is a way that people can connect. It gets a story across, it gets a message across, and it helps you connect with your audience, and it helps you engage with people in a much better way, in a more emotional and a visceral way, which is really good. The challenge is sometimes having a slight separation between authenticity and the amount of information that you give at the same time, which can then potentially be collated. A good example is that there were a lot of quizzes that used to go around, especially on Facebook, and they were these funny quizzes, you know, what's your Star Wars profile or something, and they ask a bunch of questions, and some of them are your maiden name, or what was your first name, your second name.
Who were you in Star Wars profile?
Yeah.
Who were you?
Probably a Wookiee. And if people are listening to this,
so it's okay.
Yeah, I've got a shaved head and I'm bald and everything else. So for me to be a Wookiee is quite an interesting one. But then you start talking about, you know, all these other quizzes that are coming up, and, you know, mother's name, and then you'd combine it with somebody else's name, and you start having this thing, and they give you a result. And then they ask people to share it with their friends, and then suddenly all of these people engage. And what they end up finding out is this was just an exercise to collect personal data from people's Facebook profiles, which was then used.
And I think what they don't realize that basically any time they take this quiz is actually a random answer, which is just a random any answer.
Yeah.
It's not dependent on any of your answers.
No. So it was a huge, huge data gathering exercise. Mm-hmm. And what the other thing that it did is it identified your Facebook identity with all of this personal information that was collated. So now what they could do is they could tie that information back to your Facebook profile. It was genius in a way, if you think about it. It was a really good marketing method because it's a fun, engaging, you know, thing to keep people amused, and people weren't thinking about anything bad about it. But the end result was that they were able to collate a significant amount of information that could be used. And this is where you've got to be sure that you're separating your activities online from your authentic message. With branding, you need that authentic message so you can actually get your values across and get your message across, get the engagement across, and connect with your audience. But understanding the information that you've given that message needs to be carefully managed. And when it comes to your digital footprint and all of the important aspects that you can get out of that, does it contain anything that could be potentially used to identify you or be used as a way of getting access to your account details? And I know it's sometimes very difficult because people want to be engaging and authentic and share their life stories. And sometimes the difficult stories are there to get a message across And it is something that you have to tell. But it's also having that awareness of being slightly careful that some of the more specific information that you share can be something that's quite valuable. So if your message is going out that wants to be authentic, make sure that it's an engaging story and that it's got the emotion behind it, but it doesn't always have all of the detail in it that's very specific, because those specific pieces of information is really where the gold is, especially when it comes to identifying aspects of it. And when you start talking about children or pet names or pets or anything of that nature, be aware that that information can be used. Be aware that these are identifiable markers, so that if you're looking at your bank account information, the questions that they use, what is your mother's maiden name? Which city were you born in? What's your pet's first name? These are things that the questions are. What's your favorite movie? Now, if you've got your Facebook profile, which has got your mom over there, you've got your birthday on over there, you've got your favorite movie that's been identified in your profile, and you've got your favorite song, that's your footprint, and that's all your digital identity information that's easily collated. And people can quite easily see it. So if they might become a friend with you, they can see all of these pieces of information. And that's where I think social media needs to be a bit more responsible with the information that they collate and also the information that they share, because it is so rich, it's so specific. Although it helps them engage people more and helps them to connect and identify people more, it's very personal information. And that's where, again, coming back to authenticity, make sure your message is correct. Your message is something that connects and gets a story across, but it's not got all the details in it. One of the people that I interviewed is Graham Brown, and he focuses about storytelling. And the key thing with the story is getting the message across, getting the metaphors in it, getting the emotion in it, getting the overall feeling of it in there. But it doesn't always have all of the detail in it, because you're allowing the other person's emotions and perceptions and imagination fill in those gaps. And that's the key, I think, to authenticity, is being able to tell a story, but it doesn't always give away all of your own personal identity and details in that. And that's a bit of a skill, I think, is being able to tell a good story.
You know, what I like to do, I actually do this exercise, and I recommend it to my clients all the time. I say, Google yourself. Mm-hmm. And I think for you and me, it will be a little bit different, because your name is quite rare and my name is quite rare.
Yeah.
For John Smith, it would be a different story altogether, because I had a client who actually had literally named almost John Smith, just in translation. And it was no branding situation, because there were far too many people like that. But when you have a little bit more or less rare name, then you can Google yourself and you can see what kind of words are associated with you. And if your brand is literally associated with what you want. Because I was a commercial photographer for a very long time, and I wanted to position myself as a commercial photographer, despite I was creative director at the same time, but I wanted to be known for my hobby. Mm-hmm. And then after some time, when I start working, I got back to branding again, officially. I wanted to reposition this. And when I was Googling my name, I was photographer everywhere. Mm. And so what I did, I changed my name on the sites where I was mentioned as photographer. So I put my full name, or I changed my surname. I mean, it was my correct name, just different pronunciation of that. And literally, I think within 2-3 months, I fixed the situation. So only reference with the interviews about branding or something like this remain. And everything which was referred to different professions actually gone. So would you recommend something like this when we play around our digital identity, how it can affect us? Because obviously I didn't want to look like a fraud, because, you know, it would be same photo and stuff like this. It's just a different pronunciation, because my surname, I mean, obviously not in English originally. I can write it in many different ways. still will be mine. But what would you recommend if a person want to rebrand? for example, and the person have this digital footprint. So what are your suggestions?
That's an interesting question. You could look at it two ways. You could use the approach that you did, which is a really smart way because you used SEO practice or more recent information to push down some of the older content. And by updating the information or adding new information, you're increasing the recency of it, which basically, from an SEO perspective, will then push the older content lower down the pages. You'll still be able to find it, but you'll just have to look further down the search results to be able to look at that information. So from an SEO perspective, that's one way that you can do that. The other way that you could do that is, if you want to do it from a branding perspective, is incorporate that into your branding. But again, you can tell the story. This is how my life has changed. I've gone through this story. I was a photographer, and then use the whole
I'm not hiding aspect. It just to say
no,
it
no,
was
no.
just like amount it's, of information yeah. when you consistently brand yourself yeah. for 10 years as
yeah.
this, and then you know you get, and all this time I was doing branding on my position in the agency. It just like yeah. I didn't promote it because it was just a job.
No,
when not. I move it over to business, I needed yeah. more focus on that again. So that's yeah. why, like, I was eliminating amount of information and yeah. basically increasing the amount.
Yeah.
But what if I will change, as you said, I will list the sites, for example, and I will change my data to some random email, like, again, giving another example, for a very long time, I had my email, which was associated with my first blog, which I created in 2008. Mm-hmm. This blog is no longer exist. It was hacked and like seven times and I gave up on it. So, but I still have the name of that blog in my first email, which I mm-hmm. use, but not anymore, to be honest, because it's actually covered with all the information. I just closed it and started another one. I mean, it's wrong, I know. So, but what I actually did, I understood that I need email where I registered all the time for some random sites. Mm-hmm. I created an email ID, which is literally consists of mail to and some other parts. So it's a mail to ID. I registered everywhere with that email and it has no connection to anything else.
Mm-hmm.
So also there, I mean, I have too many telephone numbers right now, but I mean, again, nothing registered to bank and stuff like that. So if I will change this information for all the old sites, this is almost random actual real ID, but it's not connected to anything sensible. Will it work, or will the old information be connected and still remain somewhere in a digital world?
The challenge is with Google, they index everything and they keep it. Mm-hmm. Now, there's two ways that you can do it. You can, on all of the older sites, as you suggested, you can change the email address and then it'll more or less overwrite it. Or you could even now submit a request to Google with a correct justification, requesting that the information is removed or cleaned up. I think there used to be a very strong requirement for a court requirement, or there has to be some kind of criminal case or police case reference to it. But now, because of GDPR and some of the more stricter privacy laws, you can actually put in a request and they can clear it down. But I think they do it based on a rating. Is it going to be something that's going to fulfill a requirement, or is it just purely being used as a way of manipulating search ranking or search information or anything of that nature? If they think it's not a valid request, then they will reject it and the information will still be indexed and available. But the method that you use by just using a random email address, if you update all of these sites, then that'll update it. And again, you might find some random link to an old search where it'll still be available, but it depends on how dedicated somebody is mining for information
mm-hmm.
and how valuable that old information is. If it's really an old email address and it's not being used at all for any purposes, then they're not going to be too concerned about it.
So does it make sense to create a new email for all the bank accounts, which is like not settled anywhere?
What I do is I have a separate email address for the one that I use for my financial systems. Because that means that if something happens, the notifications that come through on that email address, if they're finance related, they are important. They are serious. And that way I try and keep the really important things as separate as possible. So for general use, email use, notifications, people contacting me, I use a different email address. And that's one that I use quite regularly because it means that anything that comes into that, I know it's not going to be related to my bank account. So that's a way that I add a certain layer of separation between the two. So that's a better practice. It doesn't mean that you're 100% safe. It just means that you're a lot more secure than having the same email address that's connected to all of your social media accounts and your bank account. Mm-hmm. And that's a big stepping stone. Because if people can get access to the same email account that's connected to your bank account, they've got your identity.
So our last question, which is really, really important. What kind of suggestions do you have for our audience? Very practical suggestions because we don't have much time. But also I want you to suggest how people can connect with you and connect this suggestion to this direction.
Okay. First of all, I know we spoke about digital identity, and to manage your digital identity, my first suggestion is dangerous apps. Any app which are these junky games or anything else which are available, especially from third-party stores for Android, delete them, don't use them, get them off your phone. There are entry points into your life. Second of all, the other thing is I switch off notifications on all of the apps apart from my banking applications. The reason is if something happens, if a payment goes through, if it gets triggered, then I can immediately act on it. And I have had somebody try to run transactions through my cards, and that's why I've got that enabled, because it gives me a pulse on my financial details. And that's very important because I can monitor that. My last tip is that I automatically monitor my account. And one of the websites that I use is called badrap.io. They've got a free section where you put in your email address and it'll notify you if anything happens with a website that your email account is registered on. And that's a way that you can easily register and manage anything without having to think about all of these things. So that's my three suggestions when it comes to, you know, really good tips. And
so how can people connect with you and tell them what exactly they can get from you when they connect with you?
People can connect with me on LinkedIn. I've also got a Twitter account, but I've got a podcast called Thinking Like a Genius, and I dive into topics like what we've discussed before. The recent one was lucid dreaming and dream work and dream coaching. And it focuses around how people think and psychology and neuroscience and all the things that helps me understand how people think and why I get fascinated with how cybersecurity functions using psychology.
This is fantastic. So I will give all the links below. Thank you so much for this amazing interview. And hopefully, maybe we will discuss psychology in some other story, in some other show.
Sounds fantastic. Thank you very much.